When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Today is the day to wake, work, and win. Welcome to The Standard.
You know, if you go back into when the fire service really started to become a full-time position from like a more normalized volunteer spot, they're all coming out of, you know, World War II and Vietnam. There was this very command, like, hey, you're going to do this. And they're, of course, yeah, no problem. But now you have this other generation of, why are we doing that? Show me. Like, I need buy-in on you. Whereas when you get someone out of the military, well, they're going to follow orders because that's what they're trained to do. We've lost a lot of that. And I'm not saying it's any better or any worse, but for what's worked for me is, hey, I'm going to go show you how to do this. And then we're going to have some fun, right? We're going to get the stopwatch out. We're going to see who can do it faster than me. And, you know, like that morale, if you crush your officer in something and it's a fun, good atmosphere,
yeah,
there's nothing better.
Yeah, the competition's a great thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, as long as, you know, it's not harassing in a way. But, you know, I think people that understand that and understand the responsibility that comes with that, you can do it in a way it's a blast. We used to do veteran research races, and it was a blast to see who could be the quickest in.
And it's fun, and you should have some of that dark humor of, you know, razzing people and – but you can't razz someone if you haven't done it yourself, right? Like, it's okay to have like kind of a jocular atmosphere. Like, I think that's healthy,
yeah.
But everyone has to be doing it, because if not, then you're just kind of a prick.
Yeah. You can't just have the peanut gallery that stands in the background, you know, and just cackles jokes the whole time and doesn't even put their gear on.
Yeah. It's a culture that I am seeing less and less of, which is nice.
Yeah. I think that the connections that are happening, right? Now that kid that's 22 years old got hired and isn't maybe getting what they need, goes, oh, wait, I'm not crazy. There's people out there that are like me. I just need to stay the course and we'll figure this out at some point. So
it's true, but there's also another side of this where, yeah, you can go out and find great content. Like, there's no shortage of that. But there's also no shortage of people who are doing drills in jean jackets and gardening gloves, and you're like, dude, if you don't show me how to do this in your gear, I'm out. Like, I get it, you say that you can push a 2.5 by yourself flowing and moving on slick concrete and no bunker gear. Like, I want to see it, dude. Like, you got to show me.
Yeah.
And I think that the people who are trying to find those like true operators in this business, if you see someone who is not doing it in the gear that it should be expected, change the channel. Find somebody else, because they're giving you a false sense of the ability to do that. And if you are making these videos or you're doing these podcasts and you're not showing that you can truly do this in every sense, right? Yeah. So like, hey, I can, let's say I can – there's some incredible mask up videos out there, like sub 8 seconds.
Yeah.
All right. do a hot lap around a house, get your heart rate up, and then I want to see it. Or get your gloves soaking wet because you were just stretching an exterior line, and now do it. Like, that's what I want to see. Because to me, those times aren't going to be as fast, but I'm going to be way more impressed if, you know, you're banging a 35 by yourself, but you've brought it from the rig to wherever you're deploying it. The game is completely different that way. So you need to vet the content you're looking at or listening to. I think it's really easy to get talking heads on these podcasts and be like, oh, this is what I would do. And, you know, all these weak motherfuckers out here, like, come on, man, let's see it.
Yeah.
You're 90 pounds overweight.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I think that was a kind of a realization when we got into the podcasting thing was it's really easy to talk, right? And this is coming from someone who talks for hours every week, but like, let's see it. Show me what you got. And like, that's the beauty of our Master the Basics class is like, me and Tom are out there. We're doing everything with everybody the entire 2 days. And the instructors that we bring out there, dude, these guys are lights out. Anyone who's instructed with us, the best firemen I know, like hands down. It's impressive the amount of incredible firefighters we have at our department. It's really impressive.
That's awesome.
Sorry, I had to get that out there because it's not just two or three people. It's like you could fill an entire shift at our department with like hitters, which is awesome.
That's great. Yeah, that's awesome. And you're totally right too about making sure that, you know, you pay attention to the people, because as much as yes, it's positive that you can connect, there's also a wall that people can put up sometimes too. So it's,
oh yeah, man, yeah. You get a real nice mustache. Okay. You get a gorgeous leather helmet.
Yeah.
And you start talking about, you know, making stretches and stuff like that. Like, people are going to listen to you.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen it where, you know, like some of these Instagram accounts have hundreds of thousands of followers and I haven't seen anything. Like, show me what you got.
Yeah.
Like, don't shit on other people. Like, let me see what you got. And I think that, you know, like, that's what our class does. Like, I think we do a pretty good job of showing what's possible with just the right mindset. Like, that's it. Come with what you have and you will leave a much better firefighter than when you came. And I'm not saying we have this whole thing together. Like, I'm not saying we're God's gift to the fire service. That's, I mean, not by any means, any stretch of the imagination, but I think that we at least show you like the path that you should start walking, because there's no one out there who's, you know, 100% doing it right.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are better ways to go than others, I think.
Sure. I equate it. And I mean, I've been taking your class. It sounds awesome. But I think there are great classes out there that do put you in those positions. And I went to Rent Under Fire this year and I couldn't talk any higher about that class. Just unreal.
Phenomenal class.
Right, like to get hit over the head with that class and find a new gear and find out mentally how much farther you can go. Like those classes need to exist. I don't know. Like sometimes I think like it would be better if those were more upfront, like in a fire academy. But then I know you can't really do that because people aren't as skilled to be able to be put in those positions yet. So I don't know how to make
the point of the fire academy. The point of the fire academy is firefighter 101. Our job is to make sure that when you get on that rig your first shift, you're ready to go. And we've gotten a bunch of crap because we use echo bikes at our training facility. And, you know, like, oh, what are you guys trying to do? Like, you guys aren't, you know, XYZ. We are trying to show them what that next level is. But your expectations are firefighter 101. We want to show you that next level. We want to show you that you, if you want to keep going, this is what you got to do. But you're getting graded on firefighter 101. And so I think having that balance is important.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I guess I don't think showing them is great, right?
Yeah,
like you said,
I think so.
Exposure to it early.
Totally. And like, we bring our online crews and we'll get the stopwatch out. We'll run through an evolution, right? Very basic fire skills. And we'll have our online crew do it and we'll time them. And then we'll have our probies do it and time them. And it's right there on the board. These guys did this in half the time. So like, you're not rated on their time. We just want to show you that like, this is the expectation after a little bit.
Well, yeah. And you get the right person. They see that and they go, I'm going to be that fast. So, you know what I mean?
I'm going to be faster.
I'm going to take that challenge. Right. And hopefully that helps kind of put those people out there. So now you as an instructor can see that. And then you as, you know, a department head or somebody can help put those people on the right track. I think that's a great newer, maybe not a trend's not the right word, because I don't think everyone's necessarily doing that, but that's a more modern, the word modern gets thrown around with everything, but approach to new people and onboarding them in that way. Paco's in our chat here, and he said, ask
don't
Craig,
read this.
Hitters or fitters? We're not going to do that one? You don't have to. I mean, I get it, but...
No. Put it down, Paco. Put the keyboard down.
You heard him, Paco. So, segueing out of that and then into another thing, we're talking about mental fitness, right? So, obviously, the fire services is a huge hot topic and in a great way because I think we're recognizing and we're doing a lot more than we used to. But if you could touch on mental wellness and mental fitness and almost kind of like, how do you train yourself to be more mentally fit for the job?
This is a deep one, buddy.
I know.
Well, first of all, Paco taught me about that firefighter 101 thing. So he's one of, and he's coming out to our next academy. And he's one of the best humans I know. So I like that you use the term mental fitness. That is kind of the new in vogue modern term that's being thrown around. And I actually like it a lot better than mental health. I think that mental fitness conveys that this is a lifelong journey and you always need to be working on it, as opposed to mental health where you're like, oh, I'm good now. I can sit back until I get sick. And so I think that's probably the right way to go about it. So I kind of see this as two different things, and that's just because of my recent experience. I think that mental fitness, when it comes to the mental toughness aspect, is a lot easier than the depression, anxiety, PTSD route. I think that's something that I, at least for me personally, like I feel like I work on that more, and that's really easy, or I should say it's really simple, right? Like, find your boundary, continue to push it. Whatever it is, right? Like that's all you need to do. Find whatever sucks, do that thing until it doesn't suck anymore, and then find the next thing that sucks and then do that until it doesn't, and rinse and repeat. When it comes to the other side of the coin, this is where I think we don't do a very good job in the fire service. And I think we're trying to get departments to have employee assistance programs and to have, you know, access to mental health services. But I think we're missing the mark, honestly. I think that it's all good intentions. But when I had my first kind of difficulties with depression and PTSD after there was a shooting at a Planned Parenthood in 2014, I believe. And I was one of the SWAT medics, and it's just it was horrific. So it's as easy as I could say it. And so my officer at the time was like, hey, you're going to go to a therapy appointment. Like, you don't have a choice. You're going today, like right now. I'm like, okay. And when I get to the therapy appointment, they suggest that I start using coloring books because that would help me like through some anxiety. And I was like, hold on a minute. I came here expecting to get better, and this is what I left with. And I think a lot's changed since then. So when you're trying to find a therapist, you want something that's called a cultural competence. And it's basically like they kind of have an idea of what you do. you know, I've some people in my circle that have gone to a therapist and made the therapist cry based on what they've experienced, which obviously is not the route that we want to go. And so finding that right person is really important. It takes a long time. Okay. It's not like Tinder where you can just swipe to find the right person. This is you're not looking for a one night stand. You're looking for like a long-term relationship. And, you know, therapy is a very like top down approach. So the way I like to think about it is like you have a high rise fire. Okay. And if you're going to therapy, you're getting dropped off on the roof and you're working your way down and trying to fight it that way. And it helps therapy. I mean, I've been going to therapy for a long time, and what it does is it gives you a vocabulary of what's happening. So, hey, you can't go into crowded spaces because of this in your brain. Okay. Or the reason that you're having a hard time sleeping is because of this, but it, at least for me, like doesn't necessarily fix the problem. So I went through the worst depression I've ever had probably like 7 months ago now, and came out of the blue, man. Like I was on like this know-nothing cardiac arrest, and I shouldn't say know-nothing, no cardiac. I mean, it's terrible for a person, but for us, it's a relatively routine thing. And I got home the next morning and I was like, dude, I'm not okay. I'm down. And it snowballed into a completely debilitating experience that culminated. I'm speeding this up, but I give like an hour and a half class on this. But you know, I was taking my kids to the zoo, right? You know, like it's one of those days where you're like, dude, I don't know what I'm going to do with these kids, but like we got to find something. We eat lunch every time we go, like at the elephants. Okay, so me and my kids, we're at the elephants, we're eating lunch. And I'm just numb. You know that feeling when you've been up for a full 24-hour shift and the next day just like colors are dull, food's dull, like you're just okay. That's the way I was for about a month every day, no matter how much sleep I got. So I'm holding my daughter's hand and we're walking from the elephants to the hippo and I feel nothing. I don't feel joy. I don't feel sadness. I don't feel anything. I'm just numb. And so I get home and I'm sitting in my truck and I can't move. I can't physically move. And my wife comes out. She's like, you all right? I'm like, yeah, I need a minute. She's okay. She comes out like 10 minutes later and she's like, you okay? I'm like, no, I'm not okay. She's like, you want me to call 911? I'm like, I would rather die in this truck. You call 911. So I called Rhonda Kelly, who runs an incredible organization out here, and she's like the guru of mental health. Company called Responder Strong. She's incredible. And I'm like, hey, this is what's going on. Like, I don't know what to do. And she told me to call this gentleman at a place called Mind Spa here in Denver. And he picks up the phone. And I'm like, hey, man, I know you don't know me, but like, this is what's up. And he's like, don't worry about it. I've been there. You need to move. Like, you need to physically move your body. And he's like, when you're done, call me back. I'm like, okay. Long story short, it took me, you know, probably like 30 minutes to get out of my truck upstairs. My wife had to help me get dressed. Like, I was in bad shape. So I go and I go for this long walk, which ended up turning into a run. And I come back and I call this guy back and I'm like, hey, because the clinic, the Mind Spa, does ketamine treatments. And so I'm like, hey, I need to come in. And he's like, we can get you in a month. And I'm like, I won't last a month. I was at that point where I was having SI and all this other sorts of stuff. And I think what hit me so hard is like, I'm supposed to be the guy, right? I have a podcast called The Standard and I can't even get dressed by myself. Like I say that I'm this like awesome firefighter and like I can do all this stuff and then people read my book and like I felt like a total fraud because I couldn't get my shit together. So I was like, I'm not going to make it a month. And so he's like, we can get you in 9 days. I said, all right, I can make 9 days. I can make that happen. So over that 9 days, I tried to figure out like what just happened to me. Why did this come out of absolutely nowhere and debilitate me like that? And so I am not a doctor. I am a paramedic. This is like my basic understanding of this whole thing. So as a self-preservation tactic, our brains will increase the connectivity of our like safety pathways. So when we start to feel threatened, our brain basically says, okay, let's shut that pathway down and let's reinforce this one that tells this guy he's okay, right? We're going to give him all the chemicals he needs to like run his body. Well, those can basically put you in a state where, so you have your sympathetic and parasympathetic, right? And then there's another, and this is all the stuff that I've learned. This is none of my opinion. This is just what I've been told by doctors. There's another side of this with your central nervous system called dorsal. And what dorsal does is like, if you can imagine, if you're about to get into a street fight and your body says, hey, we're going to shut down your digestion because we don't need that. And we're going to shut down reproduction because we don't need that. Well, that system goes haywire and shuts your whole body down, which is what causes a panic attack. So when I was sitting in the truck and couldn't move, my brain was basically like, shut it all down. Like we've hit maximum capacity. So what ketamine does, if used in the right way, right? If you're, this is, it's the same drug, but there's like this Goldilocks zone of dosages and how you use it and what you do in between these. So don't just think that if you're going through depression and you get some street ketamine, like this is completely, completely different. So what ketamine does is it basically tells your brain to start making the chemicals you need to open up those other pathways that you can't use anymore. So when life starts to feel dull, it's because your pathways in your brain can no longer operate to allow you to feel those emotions. So what ketamine does is opens those pathways back up because it basically tells the brain to, or body to, create the chemicals needed for electrical connection. That's the very short version of that. So I go in to the clinic and I talk to the doctor for about an hour and a half before my session. And when you're in a session, you have a nurse there. It's 6 sessions, 2 days apart, and they gradually increase the dose of ketamine. And the session lasts for like 45 minutes a piece. And so during that time, the nurse is like constantly checking your vitals and making sure that everything's kosher. This is just what happened to me, but that one session changed my life. Like I came out of there and I was like ready to go back to work, just like that, 40 minutes. And I think that's the piece that we're missing with this whole mental health thing is like, yeah, we should go to therapy and we should have peer support and we should do all these other things, but we need to give our members some options when that doesn't work anymore. And the options right now are to go and get shit faced after shift, right? Like what else do you got?
Yeah.
You can't use anything else, or you can use SSRIs, which barely work for most people. They work for some, but for a very small amount of people. So ketamine, MDMA, and these drugs are all used in the right way with a trained professional and, you know, and including talk therapy. So it's like you have to have it all, but we need to start getting some protocols in place where if things aren't working for you, we got to give you another avenue. We just had a guy on the podcast that it's coming out this week, and they've done studies with ketamine where you have a 80% reduction in suicidal ideation after one treatment of ketamine. So it clearly works. MDMA is another one that should be getting approved. They just had a big MAPS conference, and that should be getting approved to help out with that. So all of these other chemicals are a bottom-up approach to mental health. So you need to have both, right? Like, you have to be able to give all this stuff vocabulary with talk therapy, but we also need to give our members an opportunity to kind of like reset themselves and not make it such like a scary thing. You know, like I told our new recruits that are coming out, it's not like if you're going to get PTSD, it's more of when you're going to get it. And I think they're actually in a way tougher spot than we are, because if you or I go through a situation like this, they'll be like, man, that guy's seen a lot. But this could be their first shift.
Yeah.
Maybe they've never seen a dead person before. Whereas we're like, yeah, it's kind of whatever it is. That's the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to that person. And what do? We shit on them because they're sad, because their trauma trophy isn't as big as ours is. Like, that's not right. So I told them, I'm like, this might not happen to you. This might never happen to you, but I guarantee it's going to happen to someone you know. And don't think that just because you got knocked out of a fight that you can't get back up. It goes back to the whole baseline thing. Life isn't always going to be up here. But if you know this is possible and you get knocked down, now you know where you need to get back up to. It's like I said, everything, it all comes together, man. So yeah, I think the mental toughness portion, super simple. Find what sucks, do it till it doesn't, and then rinse and repeat. The mental health part of that, mental fitness, that's a trickier topic, because it's part of the job. We signed up for it. You know, like it's our duty to take on the ills of the world. It's what we raised our hand for. But we could be doing a better job of making sure that we are allowing our members to leave the fire service just a little bit worse than they came in, instead of horrifically broken for the rest of their careers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, that was a long answer.
No, dude. super educational. I thanks for sharing that. I mean, 7 months ago, that's fresh, man. And sharing that story, really, thank you for that. That's,
you know, when you feel like a fraud, it's just your ego.
Sure, yeah.
And that's what it was for me, right? Like, I put too much stock into what other people, you know, think about you. You know, like, you run a podcast. You want people to like you. You want people to like your show.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and there's pressure that comes with living up to that. I totally get what you're saying. Yep.
All right. Do your kids know you have a podcast?
I mean, they don't really know what it is. They're too young now, but
okay.
You know what I mean?
Who loves you more than your kids? Fucking nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody, dude.
Yeah.
So, like, the most important people in the world, they don't give a shit.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Anything else that's going on. And so to me, that was like a kind of an aha moment of, dude, get out of here. No one cares, man.
Yeah.
And that doesn't kill my passion for all this stuff. Like, it doesn't kill my passion to do everything that I'm doing, but it did give me a bit of a reality check that, man, this shit just does not matter, dude.
Yeah.
Like, what they think matters, what my wife thinks of me matters. Yeah. And that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, if I start slipping and my friends come to me, you know, if Paco came to me and was like, hey, man, starting to get a little soft around the waist, you know, like, yeah, I haven't seen you train. Like, yeah, I'm going to take that into consideration. Be like, yeah, you're right, man. I'm going to get right. But that, like, global view of, like, what does the fire service or, like, what does my department think of me? I just don't care, man. I value some people's opinion, but at the end of the day, it just really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you think about yourself?
Yeah.
That was the craziest thing, I think. So I think my wife's seen me cry like 3 times. Okay. And so that day when I got out of my truck, I just totally broke down. Right. And like, I went into the bathroom, turned the shower on so she couldn't hear me. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, if this was your son, because I'm like, dude, I am such a pussy. Like, I am so weak. Like, I was going through this whole thing. And I'm like, if your son was in this position, in the bathroom with the shower on crying, what would you tell him? What would you tell him? Would you tell him he's a pussy?
Never.
Would you tell him that he's a fraud? Would you tell him that, you know, he's weak? No. You'd hold him and say everything's going to be okay. But we don't have it in us, and I think it's in our line of work, to talk to ourselves the way we would talk to someone we loved. And that's crazy. And so now I think, like, finding those ways that we can have that self-talk, like talk to ourselves the way we would talk to our best friends, that to me is like my new goal. Because I used to use like self-hatred as fuel, and like that is very unhealthy. That is a super unhealthy way to go.
Yeah.
Because when you find yourself in a vulnerable position, you're going to go back to your default, which is you're a piece of shit. Like, why are you so weak? And that used to be my motivator, and now it's not anymore, which I think was like the best thing that came out of all this.
Yeah.
So another long-winded answer. See, once you get me going, dude, it's hard to shut them off.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Stop. Those answers can be as long-winded as they need to be. So personally, I've never heard anyone really talk about it in this way before. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm just a guy in the crowd for this in the same way. But like, hearing you say things, and I can think and draw parallels to my own life and my own journey through mental fitness and you know, the ups and downs that come with this career and with life in general. And the self-talk is a huge one, right? And that's something you have control over. Positive self-talk is something that you theoretically have control over, that and you can make that shift. One of the things that made me laugh, you talk about our kids, and I always think of it, I don't remember the exact quote, but Dave Grohl, the Foo Fighters, right?
Yeah.
He talks about his daughters, and yeah, they got to grow up in a different lifestyle, but I can't remember the exact quote. Maybe I'll find it one of these days, but basically it's like, my daughters couldn't care any less that I'm in the Foo Fighters. And like, it's kind of the similarity with that. Like, your kids couldn't care any less that you're doing any of this stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, he thinks it's cool I'm a fireman, but he's like, does he honestly care that I can throw a 35? Like, no.
Yeah.
He didn't care. Does he honestly care that I can, you know, do some of the stuff? No, he didn't care.
I never. He's like, well, I'm a second gen, and I never remember any of that stuff with my dad, ever. I never was wondering how good my dad was at the job. It just, that's not the way that a kid is with their parent, especially doing a job like this. Like, for me, it was rollerblading on the bay floor. Like, it wasn't, you know,
hanging out at the firehouse.
Yeah, it was never. Go ahead.
I'm curious to know what your dad would say about our generation in the fire service now taking mental health into account, when clearly it was needed when he was a fireman.
So he's acknowledged it, and the one time I've really heard him kind of talk about it, and I've only seen my dad cry a handful of times in my life. One was kidney stones, so that doesn't count. And then,
yeah, it does.
Well, you know what I mean. It does count. I shouldn't say that. It does count. But he gave a toast at my wedding. And he basically, he my dad never writes speeches, and it's out there. My dad's a chief, so whatever. So he does do speeches. That's kind of one of his things. And he never writes them. He just kind of goes off the cuff. And in my wedding, he talked about some of that. And he was half joking, but he's half serious about, like, managing your emotions. And he goes, now I watch Coco and I cry like a baby. He goes, for 20-something years, I never cried. I bottled everything. And he goes, now I watch a kids movie and in 3 seconds I'm crying. And it's true. Like, I've noticed that as my dad's getting closer to the end of his career. He's not, like, you know, rolling around on the ground crying all the time. But he is much more in touch, I think, with that side of it. I think he learned that probably from our generation coming in and that becoming a more regular thing. And you either get on the train or you don't. Maybe he has. I don't know. We've never talked about that stuff. But
I think that we have to strike a balance, though, because this is not a soft job. And so to think that, you know, you're going to go into the firehouse and sing Kumbaya every day, like, that ain't it. You need to have that dark humor. You need to have that fire table, you know, toughness. It's got to happen.
Yeah.
And so we can't lose that. We can't lose that ability to say dark things, because that is part of our coping mechanism. But we also can't completely like forget about the fact that we need to make sure that we can heal what we have going on so we can go out on that next call. And so I think some departments are going way too far in the other direction, and they're not allowing that dark humor. They're not allowing that, even the way that you build your firehouse and you're creating these separations, like, that's your tribe. You need that. You need to be able to say wild shit and not try and censor that. The other half of that is like, we need to be better to ourselves and to our crews.
Yeah. My dad's retired deputy here, Chief Leidig, says that he never judged. My dad never really judges anyone, takes everyone and makes his own opinions. So I guess, yeah, maybe over time that's changed and he's figured that out. But yeah, maybe that'd be a fun thing for me to talk to him about, just out of curiosity about that shift between two different generations. You know, I will say my and I know now I'm wiser, and I know that someday it will happen, and I'm trying, you know, you try to think of ways to not prevent it, but at least be prepared for it. I used to feel guilty that I didn't feel bad. That was my biggest thing when I first started in the career. Was like they would put me when I started volunteer, and then we started kind of getting into the ambulance stuff, and they would put me with guys my age that hadn't experienced stuff at that point. I was fortunate enough where I got, you know, hired part time young, and unfortunate because I saw a lot of stuff really young. So then by the time I was 23 or 24 years old, like, the guys who were hiring the same age as me and saw nothing, and they would put me on, you know, after full rest or something with these guys, and I had no idea that was why. And then I started to hit, like, man, am I a dick because I don't feel bad? Am I fucked up? And no. I remember it spiraled one day, and whatever, if we're dumping our purses and there's your dark humor. But, like, my wife, her friend came over, this is before we got married, and they went out. And, I don't know, they just went and did something together, like a girl date. And I'm in the apartment by myself, and out of nowhere, just thunderclap. Total just guilt of everything, started crying and like freaking out, and I was by myself. Luckily I had my dog, who like right away came, and he was right there, and he's not like a therapy dog or anything, he's just a household dog, but he saw it.
Every dog's a therapy dog.
You're right. Yeah. And but from then I think I called my dad either shortly after or maybe during it, and we had a halfway decent talk about that whole, hey, am I fucked up? Because I'm not fucked up. And he reassured me that, hey, that's okay. You're all right. You'll figure it out. Like, maybe one day you won't be okay. And yeah, there's been calls that I wasn't as okay. And there's been calls where little things have made me not okay. So
this isn't a one size fits all. You know, like, it has to be personalized. And like, for someone to feel like, is this the right, quote unquote, right way to feel? It's the right way for you. You know, like, take Tom, for example. I've never seen Tom shook in my life. And he's gone through wild stuff. And it's not like he feels like he's any less emotionally intelligent than anybody else, or he doesn't look at me as weak because I went through what I went through. It's just like, it goes back to taking care of your people, man. Figure out how they tick. Figure out what they need. And treat them the way that they have to be treated. Like, don't think that you have to come into this job and get fucked up. It just happens for most of us.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know some, we have a lot of military folks on our job. And there are some people who are like, yeah, man, like, I left the military service and they were doing some what you would imagine you'd be doing in some of those areas. And they're like, yeah, it just didn't bother me. And like, that's cool, man. that's awesome. Good for you. I hope that gains. So no, I don't think you're a weirdo, man. I think you're a weirdo because of Star Wars, but not because of the mental health stuff.
That's fair. No, and I think I've come to terms with that. But yeah, I'm definitely a weirdo with Star Wars, so we can. There's another time I cried in my life. Disney World, seeing the Millennium Falcon for the first time. You're welcome, Internet World. Yeah.
There it is, man. That's the clip you're going to use to promote this.
I should. That should be right away. I should partner up with the Star Wars podcast and jump on that.
That's awesome, man. Good for you.
I used to hide from that shit. And like you were saying, with everything else, who fucking cares anymore? Be yourself. Be who you are.
Cheers. Lean in.